I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Hello again, it's Pat Kenny here. We're currently working away behind the scenes in preparation for my new weekend show, which will be coming your way in March. Every Saturday and Sunday at 10 a.m., I'll be covering everything from the latest in current affairs to the best in culture and lots, lots more. And the good news is, to keep you up to date on all we have to offer, you don't have to do a thing. Just make sure you keep following this feed on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. Between now and then, however, I've been looking back at some of the most thought-provoking and engaging guests to grace our studio over the past 12 years. Well, now it's time to have some more recommendations on books to read. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Paul Howard, who is the father of Ross O'Carroll Kelly, the creator, anyway, the begetter,
yeah.
The begetter. Paul, good morning and
good
welcome.
Morning, Pat. Thank you.
The latest book, Camino Royale, it's going well.
It is. And I never take that for granted. It's the 23rd novel in the series. So I am aware that I've been doing this for a long, long time. So I never, ever take it for granted that a book that I write is going to sell. But I'm grateful that First 2 weeks it was number one in Ireland.
If I was writing a blurb about you, you know, I'd say Paul Howard, expert at capturing the zeitgeist of Dublin 4.
Right. Yeah. Well, I suppose that is true. I mean, I spent so many years unconsciously and then consciously studying it, you know, when I was covering schools rugby, and I'd be standing in these pitches in Skerries, standing on the sideline, listening to these South Dublin moms and dads, you know, the moms who'd be wearing, like, you know, seal fur coats, and the dads on the original Nokia, which was like a big building brick, doing business on the sideline. And I suppose I was kind of consciously and unconsciously taking that information in, and I knew that one day I'd use it somehow.
Yeah, you also talk about the fact that this cohort of people don't have an embarrassment gene.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, I got some great advice from Maeve Binchy when I was about 15, and she told me, if you want to be a good writer, you have to be a good listener. So go along and listen to people's conversations. But I think the difference between me and Maeve was Maeve had to actually strained to listen. I never did, because I was researching in an era when you're dealing with people from South Dublin who, like you said, have no embarrassment gene, but also no sense of kind of volume or embarrassment. Or so the people I was writing about, the material kind of came to me.
Yeah.
Kind of fell
I'm wondering, when people move to the area and their children go to Rock or Michael's, you know, do they transform?
I think so. I suppose the only evidence I have for this is people from outside of Dublin who've moved to Dublin for work reasons and been doing well professionally and are sending their kids to Blackrock. And I had a friend, and her son, she's from a GA background, but her son just happened to be really, really good at rugby. And it was a surprise to everybody in the family. But she was suddenly sucked into this world of the senior cup moms. And it wasn't a world she was used to, but she was suddenly going for lunches and dinners and having to buy outfits, two outfits a week, to go to all these social events. So it was completely transforming for her.
So this thing of epigenetics, where, you know, life works on your genes.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you move into the area.
Yeah.
And you become, your genes somehow change.
Yeah, but in her case, she was an outlier, I suppose, a genetic outlier. She wasn't ready for this at all.
Now, I know you like to research in so many ways. So how was your trip to the Camino?
I didn't do it.
What?
I didn't. And usually I would. I've taken Ross outside of Ireland a few times in books, and I've always sort of done it myself. But in this case, I had some friends who did the Camino. I rang one of them and I said, Writing the next book, Ross is going to walk the Camino with the guys from the Leinster School Senior Cup winning team in 1999. What can you tell me? And he said to me, well, you read my blog, didn't you? And I went, no. All my friends, you know, anyone who traveled, anyone who's friends who traveled to, you know, Southeast Asia or Australia and wrote a blog, I can tell you now, nobody read your blog. Mm-hmm. So I had to go back and read his blog. And there was so much information in that. And then some other friends of mine walked it as well. So between them, I managed to cobble together.
Conjure up.
Yeah. I mean, just the practicalities of place to place and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
All right. Now, you did not, therefore, do the Camino, but you have plans to travel.
I'm doing the Falkland Islands next year.
Las Malvinas.
On my own, yeah. I was 11 when the Falklands War happened, and at home we used to get the tabloid papers and there would just be, you know, Harrier jump jets and everything. And I was just obsessed with it. And I've read probably 30 or 40 books about the Falklands War. Yeah. It's such a pointless war over, you know, I think the famous quote was, two bald men fighting over a comb. But I'm fascinated by the place. And I have a book of maps, battle maps, of all the, okay. the main battles.
Because it's, tiny, yeah.
Tiny.
And these battles, which were skirmishes, I suppose, more, yeah. Except for the sinking of the Belgrano, which was...
Yeah, the Belgrano. And there were two British ships sunk as well. But mostly it was Argentine conscripts fighting against experienced British paratroopers.
Is it about oil, natural resources? Is it all about that, or is it about?
I think at that time it was about, you know, Galtieri was a very unpopular leader in Argentina. Margaret Thatcher was a very unpopular leader in Britain, and it was almost. I mean, they'd been talking about 7 or 8 years earlier at the UN over who was going to take the Falklands. Neither of them wanted it.
Yeah.
And then it was just a case of, you know, they both needed the boost, the popularity boost at home, and it was kind of too difficult not to have a war over it. I mean, Galtieri invaded, you know, just to bring Argentina together. What was going to unite everybody better than a war? And for Margaret Thatcher, it was she just couldn't.
And incredible, the supply lines to the South Atlantic. I mean, just so long.
I mean, I've read some accounts by soldiers who fought in the war, and you know, when they heard Argentina had invaded the Falklands, their first reaction was, how did they get up to Scotland without anybody noticing? Nobody knew where it was. And it was news to them that they still had this kind of outpost of empire in the South Atlantic.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Give me a mountain with lots to do. Give me the sunshine, give me a dew. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends, give me a dew.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.
So it was a last imperial gasp in a way as well.
Yeah, it really was.
So
you'll
have to come back to us when you have visited the Falklands, and on your return, I'd love to talk to you about it in more detail. Now, you want to recommend three books, so many books you could recommend. So what have you selected?
Well, these are my three kind of lifetime recommendations.
Okay.
So the first one is Trainspotting.
We've all seen the movie. How many people have read the book?
Yeah, I mean, I read the book probably 3 or 4 years before I saw the movie. People talk about, you know, my dad's generation would talk about Rock Around the Clock and Heartbreak Hotel and this music that changed their lives forever. Trainspotting was like that for me. That was my moment where I went, wow, this is something I've never seen before.
What was it? Was it getting into their world? Was it the nature of the writing?
I think, yeah, it was both of those things. But I think when I was at school, the novels we did at school left me cold. So for the Leaving Cert or the Inter-Cert, I think we did Persuasion by Jane Austen. And to, that put me off reading novels for years afterwards, mm-hmm. because to me, the novel was a sort of bourgeois kind of thing. I never, ever read a book before that spoke about something that was similar to my experience, which was growing up as a working class man on a council estate. And that's what Trainspotting is about. It's about a bunch of what Irvine Welsh calls schemies, because they live on a council scheme in Edinburgh. And they're working class. They, you know, they're nutcases, some of them. They're alcoholics. They're drug addicts. There's a psychopath called Francis Begbie in there, who is just the most terrifying human being I've ever committed to a page, I think. You know, I used to I'd read those scenes with Begbie in them, and my heart would be pounding when he walked into the room. And I'd never read anything like this before. It was so powerful. It's written in... he uses phonetics a lot. Yeah. So
so you can hear the voice.
I can idiot is spelled I can idiot instead of I can't do it. And I, you know, I'd never even thought that somebody could write in Scottish phonetics.
And you do it now with Russell Carroll Kelly.
And I'm going to, because all of the books I've picked actually have had some influence on my own writing.
Yeah. Trainspotting, the movie came out, people figuring, how do you do a movie of that book? But they did, and they did it well. And then, of course, there was a sanitized version of television, The Young Ones. Do you remember that series, The Young Ones?
The Young Ones was terrific.
Terrific.
But it was, I think it was just the vernacular. And that was the thing about The Young Ones as well. They talked on television the way nobody else spoke on television. Yeah. And when you watched it, you had this kind of sense that nobody has shouted stop yet. And soon the adults will come into the room and say, end this now.
Now, the next character, rather than writer you've picked, is people might know the character by name, but they mightn't remember who the author was. And we're talking about Flashman by George MacDonald Fraser.
Yeah. Flashman. I owe Enda McAvoy, my former Sunday Tribune colleague, a debt of gratitude in introducing me to Flashman. Flashman is... he's just absolutely brilliant. People who haven't heard of this series of books, there's 12 of them all together, and at the centre of it is Harry Paget Flashman. He's a soldier who fought in all these kind of outposts of British Empire in the late 1900s. Had a Victoria Cross, knighthood, was on first name terms with Vicky, as he calls Queen Victoria, and Alfred, and Albert, and is a hero of all these wars. So he fought in the First Anglo-Afghan War. He was at the Battle of Little Bighorn. He was at the charge of the Light Brigade. And he's kind of a kind of witness to history. These books are researched to the nth degree. There's endnotes at the back, and you just realize George MacDonald Fraser spent years researching them. But the twist is he's a hero, a war hero, all these battles. And in his 90s, he sits down and writes his memoirs, and he reveals it was all lies. He was a liar, a coward, and a cad. Yeah. And typically during a battle, he'll be hiding under a table, shaking.
I was reading one reviewer who went back to read the books about Flashman, and he says... After his expulsion from rugby school, he was a snob, a racist, adulterer, idler, cynic, liar, coward, cheat, thief, bully, and amoral Philistine. Yet as he shags and staggers, betrays and blunders, lies and loots his way around the world, you cheer him on his merry way.
Yeah, and that is the, and that's the influence that Flashman had on me writing Russell Carroll Kelly, because I'm thinking, how can you make this anti-hero likeable? How can he do all of these appalling things? And like you said, Flashman has a very, shall we say, 19th century British attitude towards gender and race. And the books are very politically incorrect. And he's just an appalling character. And the only thing he actually has going for him is his honesty, that he's being honest about. You know, I was hiding behind a curtain when this battle happened, and he steps out and gets a medal pinned on his chest.
And there are the parallels we see writ large with Ross.
With Ross, yeah. And it was how can you make people cheer for him? There's a great scene in one of the Flashman books. There's 12 of them, and then there's a book, Short Stories. And I'm on my third time around. I'm reading them all over again. And there's a scene where he falls in love, and he said, oh, old Flashy's gone and fallen in love. And with this woman, him and this woman, they're in a river and they're about to go over a waterfall. And it's a great dramatic moment, page turning moment. And he grabs onto some reeds and the woman grabs onto his legs. And he realizes that the reeds aren't
strong enough for the two of them.
And it's just this amazing moment where he just kicks her loose, you know, and she goes over the edge of the waterfall. But again, every single page you're saying, I hope he gets out of this.
Now, your third book is one, and I remember it well, my late Uncle Frank handed me a copy of this, a well dog-eared copy of this as a child, a paperback in one of those Penguin editions. Mm. And this is Guys and Dolls by Damon Runyon.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I could have picked any Damon Runyon collection. This is just one I happen to have. On Broadway is another great collection. And I think stories have kind of gone between different editions, different Penguin editions. I love this one. This is my feel-good book. If I feel a bit down, I'll read this or something by P.G. Wodehouse. I just happened to pick this.
Now, this is long before Goodfellas and mafia movies. But it is a milieu. I don't know how real it was when Damon Runyon created, but it's great. It's the underworld.
It's a fictionalized account of Broadway between the wars, that era of Prohibition, when America was going through the Depression and then coming out of the Depression. And what I love about Damon Runyon is he did something which I did. I mean, if I'd never read Damon Runyon, I never would have written Ross O'Carroll Kelly books. But he was a sports journalist who observed all of these characters hanging around at the periphery of sports, like gyms, racetracks, ball games, and kind of thought, they're more interesting than what's actually happening on the pitch here. And he started to sort of parlay them into his fiction. And that's what I started doing with Ross. But it wasn't until I read this book, Guys and Dolls, that I kind of saw what I could do with Ross in terms of creating a world. His world was Broadway. Mine was that Broadway between Donnybrook Church and Fox Rock Church.
And he writes in the present tense.
Yeah, which I did as well when I started writing Ross. And that's why I did that, you know. He writes in the present tense. He uses rhyming slang as well. And he has all these great characters like Harry the Horse and Sky Masterson and Madame Le Gimp and brilliant characters. All of his stories, which is, this is interesting. The first thing you learn in journalism school is first paragraph, who, what, why, when. And all of his stories start with who, what. There's no oblique openings. Everything opens with, this is the story. And then they all have a middle and an ending.
And unlikely characters like the girl in the Salvation Army.
Yeah. Who saves him in the musical. They kind of save each other. The musical is different in that the musical is a love story. And the books are very kind of male. It's a kind of macho world. Like you said, there's gangsters. He meets these gangsters, though, in Mindy's, which is this kind of place where he goes to eat apple pie on Broadway, just beyond Times Square. But they're not like Raymond Chandler books. Like, there's no... you understand that these characters are dark characters, but it isn't a noir world. Like, no gangster ever... You never see them do anything. You're just aware he's eating apple pie with somebody who's done bad things.
And a gun is a Roscoe. Money is scratch or potatoes.
Yeah. A pineapple is a hand grenade. Yeah. You know?
So women are dolls.
Yeah, women are dolls.
Or,
you know? And that's the interesting difference between the musical and the books. The musical, I love the musical, but it's very romantic, you know, and the books aren't romantic. And anybody who's involved with a doll in the books, they're considered, you know, they're in possession, they're something else possessed their minds. Like, you know, there's no good reason. It's like they're to be pitied, really.
Are all of the books that you've recommended readily available still?
They are, yeah. I mean, I know that you'll definitely get Guys and Dolls and all of the Fleshman books in Hodges Figgis, because I happened to be there yesterday. Trainspotting, you'll get absolutely anywhere. It's still, I think Trainspotting has sold something like a million copies in the UK alone. It's a phenomenal success story.
As is Ross O'Carroll Kelly and the current book, Camino Royal. Look, Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks
on the program
a lot,
today.
Pat.
Really enjoyed it.
Give me a mountain.
lots to do. Give me the sunshine, give me a do. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing Mountain Dew. So give me my good friends, give me a do.
Grab some friends and an ice-cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.